Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest episode of Grecian's Gossip. I'm joined by David Byram.
Hello.
Dan Clark.
Hello.
And Ollie Heptonstall.
Hello.
No Jamie with us this week, but we'll press on anyhow. Few bits to discuss about the weekend just gone and also events coming up. We thought we'd start off by looking back at the Lincoln City game. 1-0 win for Exeter City. David, you were there. Fair result?
On balance, probably not actually. If you were going sort of on... not so much chances created, but sort of passages of play and stuff like that. Even Paul Tisdale said he thought Lincoln probably, you know, can come away feeling a little disappointed they didn't get a draw. But, you know, City ground out the win, and that's what really matters. They, you know, they had probably about two or three chances all game, and they took one of them. Lincoln had probably the same amount and just struggled to create anything with all the ball they had. So, to be honest, on balance, you know, City probably did edge it. They didn't edge the play, but you know they were the ones who were the clinical side, and you know they can come away happy with the 3 points.
Was it a lucky win, would you say, or is that going a bit far?
No, that's going a bit far, I'd say. I think it's you know it deserved the win in a way, ground it out, but it's a sort of win you think, well, you know you come away thinking, well, we did well to win that in a way, you know, on another day that could have gone a different way, that sort of thing, you know. Which is the way City have done all season, really. You know, all three games that they've got points from so far, it has been a case of, you know, you come away thinking, well, that was a strong performance, and you know they sort of the strong performance and come away deserving the points.
Mm. Dan, did you see the game? You
think yes, it was it's a game that I don't think anyone will remember at the end of the season, or possibly even by now. Actually, it was. It was not a particularly exciting game. It was a game that probably 0-0 would have been a fair result because neither side really created anything in the game, to be honest. I mean, Exeter's goal, it's one breakaway, you know, good play from McLendon, slots in Reed, and it's a good finish from him. But, you know, looking when you're sort of watching the game and you're sort of thinking... I can't see how either side were going to score a goal because Lincoln, you know, they set up a couple of big men up front but didn't really ever look threatening or have a route to goal, irrespective of how much possession they had at times and the long balls. Well, Exeter, the team that was picked, it was very, obviously with injuries around it, but it was a very defensive team with essentially, at one stage sort of playing with six defenders in the side, and you know it was no attacking impetus at all, and you couldn't see where the goal was going to come from until it actually did. But it's a good result in the end because you've got a 1-0 win against a decent-ish side. I wouldn't have thought there'd be anywhere any kind of relegation danger at the end of the season. They'd be thinking top half roughly, and you've won 1-0 without really playing too well when you've got, you know, arguably four of your key players who would be four of the first names on that team sheet not involved in the side, and defensively you kept them quiet, that didn't really create a lot, and that's the kind of thing you'll take away from that for all Lincoln did, they didn't really ever look like scoring. And I mean, Christy Pym had another good game in goal. I think Luke Kroll, most definitely his best performance in front of St James's Park fans, we've seen. He actually, you know, he looked like the player that I think Paul Tisdale thinks he is in that game. Troy Brown, again, was excellent at the back. And, you know, that's the thing you'll take away. You know, that's now two league games at home, 2-1-0 wins. It might not be as exciting as last year where, you know, there were three or four goals every single game, but... you'll take 1-0 every single week.
Mm. Well, Ollie, I was going to ask you, I mean, David, you know, Dan's just mentioned about 1-0 wins. David, you're saying it's kind of been a pattern so far of Exeter City season. is that sustainable for Exeter City to be grinding out these kind of narrow wins? Or?
Well, not in the past. They've always been a team where, you know, they go 1-0 up and you think, you know, we can't win 1-0, so we've got to score another goal. People will hit us on the break like they did last year with Crawley and Doncaster at the start of last season, 1-0 up, and then they scored, and sooner or later it was 2-1 and we lost. But I think there's a bit more of a defensive mindset to the team this year. We seem more solid. Luke Kroll was excellent on Saturday, and it was as well as Troy Archibald Henville, it was a patched up team, and they coped really well with Lincoln's physicality. And if they can keep winning 1-0 and winning when they're not playing very well, that's a sign of a team who are going to be right up there at the end of the season.
Mm. Do you think they've learned something perhaps from last season, the experience of last season, and they haven't changed the squad dramatically from that? Do you think that's rubbing off on them?
I hope so, yeah. Certainly defensively it's good to have defenders who know each other, and certainly look, Craig Woodman's been fantastic for the past season and a bit now, and yeah, you just need that consistency back there. Piers Sweeney is more of a defensive fullback than probably Jack Stacey was, so I think they work well together, and with Troy Archibald Henville in front of that back four, it was a really solid display.
That was interesting on Troy. We haven't, you know, Exeter City fans haven't seen a great deal of him since he's re-signed. But yeah, playing for a City, and when he does play, playing in a holding midfield role as well. David, what did you make of that?
I thought he had a very good game. I mean, I thought it was brilliant tactics from Paul Tisdale, to be honest. I mean, Dan said they set up defensively. I think it was more to nullify Lincoln's threats. You know, he had Troy Archibald Henville there, whose main job, although he did sort of break forward a few times, his main job was just to mark Matt Reed out of the game, and it worked a treat. He didn't see Reed doing anything, and well, apart from making an idiot himself with Christy Pym. But yeah, he had a really good game. I don't think it was any coincidence that he and Reed went off at the same time, although Troy Archibald Henville went off before Reed at the same sort of substitution interval. I think Paul Tisdale knew that Reed was going to go off at that point, so thought, right, we'll switch it to a 4-4-2 and take Troy Archibald Henville off. But yeah, he played really well. He was just solid, and you know, you saw a few of the marauding runs that he can do. You know, he scored that brilliant goal against Sheffield Wednesday a few years back for City, where he sort of just broke from the halfway line and took it past three players. And it was really good to see him out on the pitch. And also I thought Jordan Tilson did well to sort of man mark Michael Boswick and sort of nullify his threat. And yeah, I thought City sort of did cope with Lincoln's threats well, and you know, I thought it was very tactical from Paul Tisdale, and it worked a treat.
Mm. You mentioned Reed's antics. Do you want to, just in case anyone hasn't seen it, do you want to remind people?
Well, just after City scored, actually, yeah, Lincoln won a free kick right on the edge of the box, and their player sort of stood over the ball, and for some reason Matt Reed went and stood in front of the goalkeeper, Christy Pym, and then when the ref told him to move, he moved back to behind the wall, so still between Christy Pym and the wall, and then started doing this, just started copying him for some reason, and just, you know, being stupid. And I mean, even if the free kick goes in, you look at him and think, you're just being an idiot there. But the free kick went wide, and it just made him look like a complete and utter pillock, to be honest.
You can sort of see what he's trying to do. He's trying to, you know, Christy Pym's trying to set the wall up, and he's just trying to distract him. He's trying to put him off, and, you know, make him set the wall up in the wrong position, because he's too busy thinking about, well, what's this guy gonna do next in front of me. It's a little bit of gamesmanship. I don't think it's probably technically not illegal just to mimic the goalkeeper while he's trying to set up a wall. It's the kind of thing that, as it ended up, it does look pretty stupid, because the free kick goes wide. I mean, if the free kick goes in the top corner or goes in the back of the net because the wall's not quite in the right place, you know, he probably turns away and says, well, he's made a goal there doing it, and I guess he can't get away with it too many times. This, you know, club might be expecting him to pull out these kind of antics from now on. But
it's not the kind of thing that's going to endear him to fans, is it?
You kind of get the feeling away fans are going to be, the fans are going to be on his back anyway, you know. Yeah, some of the chances he left the pitch, we can't mention here on Grecian's Gossip. But, you know, he's going to get that irrespective of it. So he, you know, may as well play the pantomime villain role, and, you know, see what happens. If it, you know, if it makes him, if it creates one or two goals for Lincoln over the course of the season, I think that, you know, their fans will probably We'll take him looking a little bit stupid on at times.
Your take on it, Ollie?
I think it was the biggest contribution he made all game. In Troy's back pocket for most of it. And yeah, he wasn't the player we saw in the FA Cup run for Lincoln last season. He did really well there, but nothing from him on Saturday at all.
Mm. Do you find David's view that was largely down to Troy so having a very good game?
Yeah, I think it was fantastic, actually. Yeah, he hadn't played for a while. Well, he did play against Charlton in the League Cup. Got 90 minutes there. And yeah, it's good to see him back playing football again because he had such a troublesome time with that knee injury. And yeah, he's a really good player when he's fit, so hopefully just the thing just to keep him fit for as long as they can.
Okay, well, Dave, I know you also had something to say about Paul Tisdale's comments. Tis mentioned after the game that he thought that was probably a game that this time last season they would have lost, so what did you make of that?
Yeah, well, as I think it was Dan said earlier, you know, last season they had those two games where, well, more than two games, like Doncaster and I think Hartlepool as well, where they were 1-0 up and then they let in a goal and just went on to lose. And that was a sort of confidence factor as well, I think. And, you know, I completely agree with what Paul Tisdale said, that this time last year they probably would have lost that because they'd have conceded in about the 70th minute, then conceded a winner in the 75th minute. And, you know, that defensive stability really does bode well that they can grind out these 1-0 wins. And, you know, they never looked in real danger of conceding on Saturday. And they didn't against Cambridge either, to be honest. And even against Swindon, you know, although they did concede, that was during probably about a 15-minute period after half-time where they struggled to cope with Swindon's switch in formation until they changed formation themselves. And so, you know, I think it really does bode well that they are winning these games that perhaps last season, although they did get to the playoff final as well, don't forget last season, but they're winning these games that last season they wouldn't have got all the points from.
Million-dollar question, I suppose. You know what that really comes down to?
Confidence. I think, you know, I think this time last season, yeah, players like Pierce Sweeney and Luke Kroll as well, who, you know, it was their first real taste of sort of prolonged senior football. And, you know, they probably have to get to know their own game as well as get to know other players in the team's game. And also injuries as well, you know, Porter's had to change a back four every week, and though he had to do that on Saturday, I think the players now know each other and know their own games, and it has less of an impact when you're doing it now 12 months on and everyone knows each other. So I think that comes into it as well, you know, players are now aware of their own abilities, their own strengths and other players' strengths, and I can sort of play to that as well. So I think that helps. And a big positive is obviously that there's a return of Troy Brown, you know, to fitness. So this time last year he was struggling for fitness. He came back against Colchester and they won, but he came back too early and was out for about two or three more months. And that was when City was struggling. And, you know, he's a real leader at the back, and I think it's no coincidence that they always seem to play well when he's on the pitch.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's have a listen to what Paul Tisdale said about the Lincoln City victory.
I'm really pleased because it was a really tough game and we've come through with a win. I'm not proud, too proud to request that the team every now and then just battle and scrap and have a clean sheet and win 1-0, and that's exactly what we did today. So really, really pleased with them and happy that we were not at our best by a long, long way. In terms of selection, in terms of the rhythm of the game, but in terms of the result, well done to them on replays.
And you mentioned it there slightly, considering the changes you had to make, change of formation as well at the back, you know, that must be pleasing.
Yeah, I mean they caught us on a good day for them, you know, in terms of, you know, John McTaylor's dropped out since the Swindon game, the injury, David Williams dropped out, Ryan Harley's still struggling, you know, and yeah, we seem a very different side than we were at the end of May. We've lost one or two, and we've got one or two of those. That's three really key injuries to the team, but they won't go out too long. But you just hope as a manager that when you get those days where you're a little bit low on personnel, the players come in and are desperate to play, and keep saying they're ready, can come in and play. And we didn't have a great rhythm about it, you know, there's too many changes in there for me to get the rhythm of the game, but we just played a very pragmatic game, picked a team to sort of neutralise what was, you know, I think they were a good side, I think they probably deserved a draw based on the ebb and flow of the game at least, but you know, it's about scoring a goal and we kept it out of the net, and that's probably a game last year at this time, August, September, we'd lost 2-1. We'd have conceded a goal then, Garland's conceded another. Today we didn't, it didn't look like it, so I'm really proud of it.
What's the difference then between that sort of performance possibly last season when you could have lost and this one?
We were defensively very solid today and combative and robust, and we didn't have any airs of graces, and we weren't trying to be too clever. We just worked. Not to say we didn't work hard last year, but we were solid, and we didn't do a great deal wonderfully well, but we didn't do a lot wrong either. And that's a lot of time, that's a key to us. So they were a good side, and any side coming for the conference having just won it, so it was going to be a tough nut to crack, and we did that today.
One of the players you brought in, Troy Archibald Henville, obviously hasn't had a great time injury-wise since being here. Came in today, and he's up against two really kind of different strikers in Matt Reed and Matt Green, who are both experienced at this level. How do you feel he did?
Well, he was selected for a certain role in the side. We wanted some physicality in the side. Without David Wheeler on the pitch and Jordan Taylor, we just felt that the balance could be tipped too far away from the strength that we'd shown over the last couple of weeks. So Troy was a good selection in terms of he brought some physicality to the side. He played in front of the back four. He did the job he was asked to do for an hour, and he played well against Charlton a few weeks ago, so the wheels are beginning to turn again. We have to manage him carefully, but he did a good job, and I looked around and thought, can I pick the smallest three players I've got in the squad to finish the game in the front line? So it was just a straight, which are the three smallest players? So we put on Holmes, Matt Jay and Jack Sparks, and made life very difficult for ourselves in one way, but brought something else to the side. We brought two wide players that could take people on, and Matt Jay was a very bright little player, and did really well for that last 10 minutes in really difficult circumstances.
Just on those two specifically, on Matt Jay and Jack Sparks making his home debut today, how pleasing is it that you can put these, you've got the faith to put these guys in the side when you're holding on to a lead or 1-0 up anyway?
Pleasing for me or pleasing for you or pleasing
well,
for the supporter? Who's
in general, is it pleasing for you?
It's pleasing for me. We then go on and get a result. Anybody can put young players in, but you've got to do it and trust them and have a degree of faith that they can do what they're asked to do, and Jack is strong enough and steely enough to do a defensive job, and I'm sure it's very pleasing for him to get the chance, but as an ex-Exeter City manager, it's always part of what I feel we have to do in develop these young players, and it's no better way than in the cut and thrust of a 1-0 win, 15 minutes to go. Come on, Jack, you need to go on there and do your job for the team defensively, and he did it.
Just on the guys that missed out today, how far away are some of them from playing? I know you said in the week that Jordan Taylor and David Willock may have featured today if they were fit enough. Was that ever?
They both could have been pushed, but it wasn't really worth pushing them. The repercussions of that could be deep. If you do it with Troy Brown last year at Colchester, we've been doing it in about 3 or 4 months. So it's a long season ahead of us. I don't think it'll be up too long. No, and I think Ryan Harley's looking very slow recovery. He'll be hopefully back soon. Dean Moxie's in full training, so we get to pick up pace and hopefully the cavalry will be back soon.
And just finally, second in the table, so it's automatic promotion on the card. So.
Well, when we were bottom of the league last year, I kept saying, sometime in October, November, I kept saying, it's about where we finish at the end of the year, so forgive me, I will use the same description. It's where we finish after 46 games, and we certainly have a focus to do that, one game at a time.
Well, that was Paul Tisdale there, just talking about the Saturday's win over Lincoln City. Let's turn our attentions to this weekend's game, Cheltenham Town away. Dan, putting it bluntly, is this a game which City ought to be looking for all 3 points from?
You'd think so, because if you look at it, where you'd be thinking Cheltenham would finish, where you'd think Exeter City would finish, you'd be thinking Exeter playoffs minimum, Cheltenham. You look at their squad. Is it going to be top half? Probably not. And you just think that's a game that Exeter made a good start to the season. Just they've got a bit of momentum. It's a very winnable fixture that, it'll just keep things going. I think man for man, probably have a better side. They finished higher last season. They won away at Cheltenham last year. It's a ground they've you know, they've won at in the past, and they've, you know, they did have a horrible record against Cheltenham for a while, but they seem to have turned that around with a few wins in a row. And I mean, obviously, you know, particularly if some of the players who missed the Lincoln game with injury can come back, are fully fit, it can only add to the, you know, to the side. And you'd probably go in there thinking you'd want 3 points. You'd just about take a point, I guess. But it's a game that City can and probably should win.
Mm. Ollie, how can you see that one panning out?
Yeah, I think Cheltenham are one of the weaker sides, with all due respect to them in the division. Struggled last season, went up from the Conference as, I think it was a champion, wasn't it? And yeah, struggled to kick on last season, very nearly went down again. So yeah, City have got a good record there, as Dan was saying, good 3-1 win there last season. So I think they'll be expecting to get 3 points from that one, yeah.
I suppose at Cheltenham, they also, yeah, they have got a game this week, they're playing West Ham in the Cup, yeah, as well, so they might have had half an eye on that. They're not going to have had a full week of rest, which the Exeter City players will have had, and they might not be quite as sharp as well, obviously, depending on how that game goes. There may be a few celebrations or in order as well, but you know, it's a game that, you know, you'd probably go City to win, and you'd fancy them to get the win as well.
David, do you know, Dan mentioned about some players potentially coming back. Do you any news on the injury front for City?
Well, Paul Sizel said last week that at the weekend, that he thought both Jordan Mortier and David Wheeler could have played through their injuries on Saturday if they had to. But by the sounds of it, David Wheeler will probably miss Saturday through injury. But as far as I know, Jordan Mortier should be back. Ryan Harley's probably a little way off yet, but Dean Moxey is in full training, so I think it's only a matter of time before we see him probably on the bench to begin with. You know, he's not kicked the ball for City yet since his return, so he'll probably start on the bench. And but I don't see why Jordan Mortier isn't returned.
Prediction?
I reckon another 3-1 to City.
Mm-hmm. Ollie?
I think I'll go for a 3-2 City win.
You done?
2-0 City.
No, I'm pretty confident. Well, let's have a listen to what Paul Tisdale says about the Cheltenham game coming up.
The squad will be very important to us this year, and players are out. Responsibility comes on those coming in, and the opportunity comes in on those coming in from the team to get the result for the team. And we've done that over the last two or three games, so that bodes well for the season. We didn't have a lot of rhythm in the team on Saturday. You know, we didn't have a great passing performance, but you know, we were very resilient, clean sheet as well, and it's a good place to start your performance from. So you know, it'd be nice when we had everyone fit, but at the moment we're picking up points, and I'd like to do that over the course now, these early months, picking up points and being in a healthy place in the league.
And next up, Cheltenham on Saturday. What are you expecting from them?
I'm expecting a competitive performance from anybody we play against this bloody year. It's early season; everyone's got a lot to play for. I'd imagine everyone's in a positive mindset. Yeah, and any Gary Johnson team will be full of energy and very determined. You know, you'll get the best out of this player. So, you know, I just think it will be another game with which we have to do the basics well and develop our performance from there. We played at the Waddon Road last year, almost quite a difficult day. It was the winter and December time, I think. The conditions weren't great. We'll be going there under better conditions this year. But I want the same kind of competitive performance that we had on that day, which was tough and robust in our minds.
And I suppose it's a bit like Swindon, it's another localish game for fans to get to. I mean, I remember you mentioned last season, I remember they packed out the away end last season.
Yeah, I'd hope we'll take a good number. I mean, it's a team, we don't travel up, we don't travel overnight to Cheltenham. It's sort of distance we can travel on the day, albeit all the Saturday traffic is, you know, not to be relied on. So we'll still have an early start just to make sure we avoid traffic. But I'd imagine we'll have plenty of supporters there. I hope we do. Our contingent last year created a great atmosphere. I'm hoping for them again.
There we go, that was Paul Tisdale looking ahead to the Cheltenham game. A few questions that we've had from people on our Twitter. Exeter City Pod, Wheeler, going or staying? If we do decide to sell, who's going to replace him? Now, this is one that's caught a bit of debate, well, in our office at least, if not out amongst City fans as well. David, what are you thinking? How do you see it?
I think there is a little movement there. There's interest from clubs which supported Tisdale all along. And you know, I think at this point in time, it might be looking more likely that he's leaving than he's staying. But it's just something Paul Tisdale said to me in the week. You don't know something's done until it's done. So that wasn't talking about David Wheeler there. That was just talking about transfers in general. But in that respect, he can't really say for certain either way. But at this present time, you know, there are a lot of rumours about him leaving as well, and I think it probably looks on balance that he could be off, but you just don't know till that happens.
Dan, that's one of those moves which a couple of weeks ago looked like Wheeler was pretty much a dead certainty. Yeah. Still bits in James's part, but it seems to have gathered some traction, doesn't it?
You sort of felt a bit like the, you know, the Ollie Watkins deal, that, you know, clubs, well, they had known about David Wheeler, they knew what he was about, and if they, you know, someone really wanted him, they'd have come in over the summer, a bit like they did with, or Brentford did with Watkins. You know, got the deal done. He's started initially on the bench. He's forced his way into the team through his performances, and you know, become a fixture in that Brentford lineup already. But you sort of felt with Wheeler, no one really came in with a serious bid suggesting perhaps, you know, he wasn't first choice for anyone. Now, obviously, a few clubs looking around and thinking, well, they've not made the start to the season they wanted, maybe picked up a few injuries, and you know, going, you know, having to, it's not quite a panic buy, so to speak, but, you know, it's the kind of deal that, particularly given, you know, the way we've seen David Wheeler, you know, play, and the fact that you've got to almost play to his strengths in that, you know, those long balls out to him on the right-hand side for him to link up with the strikers, link up with the forwards, and get a relationship with his fullback, because he, you know, and also he's playing often on the right wing. He doesn't play as a traditional right winger in that he gets the ball and, you know, tries to run past his man. He doesn't seem to be doing that anymore. So you'd thought if a club was really wanted him, they'd have come in earlier, given him a pre-season so they can work out exactly, you know, how best to fit him in the lineup. I mean, there is a few clubs, you know, being rumoured that are interested in Wheeler. You can sort of see, you know, particularly the amount of goals he got last season, that, you know, clubs at League One, bottom half of the Championship, perhaps would be interested in him. And, you know, I suppose it depends on the price that they're going to want to pay for him, because, you know, if you're getting sort of half a million to a million-ish, you know, it's good. It's, you know, it's good money for Exeter City, but Exeter then can't go out and spend £500,000 on a replacement, because, you know, that's not in the price range Exeter are shopping for. They haven't got, you know, the attraction. And I guess, you know, the club, I think, might be thinking, you know, a bid can come in. You know, do they accept it? Do they not accept it? How much do they want? And what kind of, you know, backup plan have they got? Because we've sort of seen a little bit about David Wheeler this season, that, you know, he was the easy out ball. You know, launch it long to him, he'll win that header against the left back and either flick it on to one of the strikers or control the ball and, you know, gets extra up the pitch. They haven't had that in the last couple of games. You know, Jake Taylor out on the right hand side, but he's not winning the headers, he's not going to hold the ball up as well, and it almost, you know, Portis still have to go back and have a rethink, perhaps, you know, how he wants his side to play without Wheeler, because it's a different side. I mean, you could play Simpson or Brunt in out there on that sort of in that role purely to replicate the physical presence and the aerial presence, but they're different players to David Wheeler as well. So obviously, depending on the price, you might want to keep hold of him unless there is a viable alternative in the squad and there isn't a like for like player either, you know, on Exeter's books at the minute or anyone you can obviously think, well, they're available, they could come in and be his replacement.
Ollie, in terms of, you know, David and I were talking before, yesterday about just how big a miss Wheeler would be, and I think everyone seems to pretty much agree that he's a very, very good player and a very important player for City. I mean, how big a loss do you think? I mean, would he arguably be a bigger loss than Watkins, do you think?
I think it probably would, actually, yeah. The way we play with those diagonal balls to Wheeler, he is a massive player, and, you know, Watkins was a very good player for us, but he was more of a luxury player, I'd say. David Wheeler's integral to what Paul Tisdale wants to do. And, you know, it's difficult to replace him on that right wing. We saw Jake Taylor there a bit on Saturday. It wasn't that successful there. And, of course, you've got Jack Sparks, who may be his replacement, but you feel it might be a bit too soon for him. So, certainly decisions to be made by the club. They've said in the past that they won't stand in anyone's way if they want to leave. So, I suppose it's up to David Wheeler, and the club just have to make sure they get as much money as they can for him.
Mm. And, David, in terms of clubs being linked to them, I mean, QPR seem to be the sort of the name that keeps on cropping up. I mean, what do you think that really says about Wheeler in terms of the calibre of player and, you know, the club whose eyes he's caught, really?
I think it says a lot about Wheeler as a player, that, you know, you look at these sort of players, you do move to Championship clubs and that sort of thing, and they're perhaps a little younger than Wheeler. He's obviously 26 now, but I think it shows how well he sort of developed as a player and how good he was last season, that, I mean, the Championship clubs are apparently looking at him. I mean, I'm not sure if it is QPR or what, but that does seem to be the sort of rumour at the moment, which is great for him. So I think it's the first time he has been linked with the Championship club, and, you know, even if he does go, I think it, you know, it reflects well on City that they bought this player from non-league football, and, you know, being able to sort of develop his game to the point where he's now viewed as being a player that Championship clubs are being linked to.
Okay, well, we've had some more questions come in. So, again, on subjects of transfers, are you surprised Jordan Moore Taylor and Troy Brown haven't been linked to higher league teams? I mean, David, again, how do you see that? Are you surprised at all?
Troy Brown, not really. I think if a club were going to go for him, I think it would be on a free transfer, to be honest. Because he's one of those unglamorous players in a way. You know, he's not going to be a ball-playing centre-half or anything like that. He just puts his body on the line for everything. And he's not the youngest of players, to be honest. I mean, he's not a veteran by any stretch, but, you know, I think Paul Tisdale has done a brilliant job with Troy Brown, to be honest. You know, he's been one of the best players over the past couple of years, and he could do a job at a high level, don't get me wrong, but I'm not sure he's the sort of age or position where a club would really want to invest too much money into, really. And, you know, he's... injuries can sometimes be a bit of a issue, not massively, but he did miss some games last season. Jordan Moore Taylor, I think, as Paul Tisdale said, if he had a foreign name, he'd be playing in the Championship because he's one of those ball playing midfielders. And the only thing I agree again with Paul Tisdale here. He's you know, he's not the tallest and he's not the most physical. He's not that sort of Troy Brown style of that sort of physical defender, and so I think a lot of clubs sort of view him, see him as English and think, oh no, I want someone who's big and solid in his English, give me a Spanish ball playing centre half, whereas that's not Jordan Moore Taylor's game. So I think you know, we could see him make a step up one day, but I'm a little surprised that he hasn't really attracted any interest at all, to be honest. I don't think he'll leave in this window. Like, there's been no talk of him leaving, but yeah, I think he could easily go on and play at a high level. He's still quite young, so he's going to improve. I think the only question mark with him is a little around his pace, but he's very good at positioning himself to read the play and win balls. And I think him and Troy Brown do complement each other very well as centre backs as well.
Mm, okay. Well, just finally, we've also had one from JJ. My apologies, that was Liam Windsor who submitted that last question. I'll give him a quick. Name check. But finally, JJ asks, Do clubs have some silver polish in the store cupboard for the League Two trophy, which is on its way in April/May? Daniel smirking there.
Well, it's a little bit, it's a bit early to, you know, talking about the trophy, but you kind of think the club might, if they haven't got some already, sort of be thinking about getting an order in. I mean, if you look at the way they've started, second on goal difference at the moment, lost in a playoff final last season, you'd sort of be thinking, the club would be thinking, we can go up, we can get promoted, we can win that trophy. And I don't think we've seen anything in League Two so far this season that suggests City shouldn't be up there, competing for the trophy at the end of the season. I mean, Mansfield were hotly tipped at the start of the season based on the absurd number of transfers that they made, but they've not really got off to the best start. They've struggled a little bit. It doesn't look as if they are going to run away with the division, as some pundits may have suggested. I mean, Luton, they had a great win on the first day of the season, putting 8 past Yeovil, and then followed that up by losing the following week. So they would be the other side you'd look at and go, they should be up there as well. But Coventry and Swindon have made decent starts, as well as you'd perhaps expect from a couple of the bigger clubs. But there isn't anyone you look at and you say, well, really don't want to play them. I don't, there's no one to be afraid of, based on how the first, although it's 3 games, but the first 3 games have gone. You'd put Exeter City in that top 4 or 5 clubs who are looking like the best in the division, particularly given the players Exeter have got to come back as well. That, it's very early things, it's still August, to be talking about the trophy, but it wouldn't be a huge surprise at this stage that if Exeter City were promoted at the season and they did get some kind of silverware to put in the trophy cabinet, even if it is just the playoff trophy final.
Well, which one are you after, the playoff trophy final, or do you want the big one?
You want the big one, don't you? Yeah, I think City will fancy their chances after the start they've had. They were playing catch up, really, weren't they, last season with all those injuries they had, and did well to get to the playoff final. But yeah, I think, as Dan was saying, there's not many great teams in the division this year. I think the best 3 went up last year, and you'd have to say Mansfield and Luton, Swindon and Coventry would be the ones who I'd probably fancy to challenge City. But yeah, I think they'll certainly look to get the polish out. They must already have some because of the conference playoff trophy that they have lying around somewhere.
Yeah, maybe it's been lost in the ground redevelopment somewhere, someone's misplaced it or whatever. But we'll wait and see. See how that one pans out. But brilliant. Thanks very much for joining us anyhow. And I hope you'll tune in again for another edition of Grecian's Gossip.